The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Cleveland Browns GM Andrew Berry answered questions from local media on Wednesday via video conference and gave his thoughts on the franchise's future with quarterback Baker Mayfield.
We've been pretty consistent with our messaging around Baker that we think he had a really strong season for us. We like the maturation and the growth both on and off the field. And we're looking forward to him continuing to take steps his second year in the offense.
Stephen A., do the Browns believe in Baker Mayfield?
Not yet. Yes, last year was a good year. It was an improved year. He certainly has grown up. He's matured. He handled things far more professionally than he had done in the past. I think he took on more of a leadership role. Believe it or not, I think the absence of Odell Beckham Jr. helped him to some degree because the pressure of having to throw the football in his direction, even though I don't think he threw it enough in Odell Beckham Jr.'s directions on many occasions. Nevertheless, I think it was a reprieve for him, and it allowed him to settle down and just settle in as the quarterback of the franchise and take more of a leadership role. He completed 62% of his passes last year, threw for 3,500-plus yards, 26 touchdowns, just 8 interceptions. And those 8 interceptions are key because when you go from 21 interceptions the year before to 8 interceptions, I think that's a testament and a tribute to the great coaching job that Kevin Stefanski did this past season. You got to give credit where credit is due in that regard. He's really shown himself to be a damn good head coach thus far, and we wish him nothing but the best moving forward. And obviously, Andrew Berry there, the GM, really happy that he's doing the job that he's been doing as well, being one of the few African Americans in a position of leadership for an NFL franchise. With all of that being said, I think that Baker Mayfield's size, Baker Mayfield's inconsistency over his career, I don't think 1 year makes for you to look at him and say, okay, he is our guy definitively for the future. I don't think you should feel that way about him. I think you take your time, you see what he does this year, and you move forward from there. I'm pleased with what we've seen. I'm pleased with the progress, particularly in the second half of the season, which I gave him credit for last year. But in the end, am I sold on him yet? No.
Well, do the Browns believe in Baker Mayfield? I think the answer is yes, they believe in him. They have a vested interest in believing him because they invested the number one overall pick in the draft in him. So they're going to let him fail before they move on. But he had a really, really good year. I know he's on a loaded team. You know who else was on a loaded team last year? Tom Brady. And while Tom Brady was coming to a new team, Baker Mayfield, almost every year of his career, is kind of coming to a new team. You know, he doesn't have to move and get to know a new city and everything, but every year of his career, new head coach. At one point, in a little over two seasons, in two seasons and one game, he played for four different head coaches. So, of course, we didn't know how to gauge him. Is he any good? We don't know. Then he got a head coach and some stability, and he balled out. By the way, did he have more weapons than Tom Brady? Oh, Brady had a lot of weapons. Maybe if anyone had more, I don't know. They both had a lot of weapons. Probably Brady had more. Do you know in the QBR leaders of last year, we were just talking about Derek Carr, what a fine season Derek Carr had. He was 11th in QBR. You know who was 10th? Baker Mayfield, just behind Tom Brady, who was 9th. Baker had that kind of season. Now, in the playoffs, he didn't have that kind of season. Though he did win his wild card game against divisional big brother Pittsburgh Steelers, they lost to Kansas City. And this is before Kansas City had no offensive line at all, and it was a one-score game. So do they believe in Baker Mayfield? Stephen A., the whole idea that Baker was going to be some special quarterback who could overcome and lift up a team, I don't think people are thinking like that anymore. But the question is, do you believe in him as not just a starter but a franchise quarterback? Is, do you think he can win a Super Bowl with him? Do you think whether or not he can lift up a mediocre team, if you put a really good team around him, is he going to be the one that stops you from winning a Super Bowl? I don't think so. I don't think they think so. I think they believe in him. We're still getting more information all the time. Can he take the next step? They have a vested interest in believing, but I think they do.
Well, listen, you can look at it that way, or I can look at it this way. When Andrew Berry took over, Kevin Stefanski became the head coach. If they were in the position that the previous regime was in a few years ago, would they have taken Baker Mayfield number one overall? I don't think so. That's how I view it. Certainly, you're going to take that position now because he's your guy. You've invested in him. Let's see what he's got. There's nobody definitively out there that you can go and grab, per se. So as a result, you know what? Let's take our chances. Let's see what we've got here. We've been a moribund franchise for the better part of the last two decades. We've gone through a lot. We're playing with house money now because we got to, not only did we get to the playoffs, not only did we win a playoff game, we beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs. So we're playing with house money right now. I mean, we did a great job last year. So why upset the apple cart? We don't need to do anything differently right now. But in terms of them believing, when that question is asked about the Cleveland Browns, I'm thinking long term. And I don't think that Baker Mayfield has done enough to make you say long term. I think he's done enough for you to say, that's our starting quarterback. Let's see what he's got. Let's put him on the field for us. Let's move forward next season and see where it takes us. You have no problem. None of us have any problem with them showing that kind of faith in him. But in terms of a long-term plan, let's see. Let's see.
Yeah, if he came up for – if his deal was coming up right now, would you give him a top-of-the-market contract? No, and I think they would expect to give him something less than that, right? But I want to point to a game that I saw – where I thought, and I'm sure if I'm seeing it, the Browns are seeing it too, where I thought, this is something different about Baker. It was the game against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. And Lamar comes out, remember he comes out from the locker room and he was having cramps supposedly and all this stuff, and Lamar throws a touchdown strike. And now, and you see Baker on the sideline just nodding like, yep, give me that ball. And he leads them right down the field in response. Now, Lamar Jackson then led them right down the field. They kicked the field goal and won. But Baker Mayfield was going toe-to-toe with Lamar, who's an MVP just last year, who is more talented than almost anyone, Lamar Jackson. And Baker was going toe-to-toe with him. And you could see from the look on the sideline that not only did he believe, but his belief had his team believing. That, to me, was like, and even though they lost the game, was a corner turner for me with Baker in his maturation as a franchise quarterback. These things are in flux. We don't have all the answers and the info on Baker yet, but the signs are looking good right now, and I believe the Browns believe that too.
He's thrown for at least 3,500 yards in each of his first three seasons. Pretty good numbers there, fellas.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Dame Lillard's last-second three-pointer last night gave the Portland Trail Blazers the 108-106 win over the Warriors. Lillard has now scored 92 points in clutch time this season, second most in the NBA. He's proven to be one of the most clutch Blazers ever, if not the most. Max, Dame time. It's a real thing. Tell me this, though. Do you think Dame should stay in Portland, or would you like to see him take his talents elsewhere?
He should stay in Portland. Damian Lillard is cut from a different cloth. There's no one built like Damian Lillard. He's just different. Look, do any of us believe he's going to win a championship in Portland? Are they ever going to really have enough to win it all in Portland? That's why he's going to stay, because we think that they'll be a tough out. They won't quite have enough. They won't be able to. That's why Lillard's going to stay, because he believes he's going to win a championship in Portland. He's not ring chasing. He's going to bring it there. there are very few players like that. Like, usually I love it when a star player from a market that's, you know, it's on the West Coast, the games are on late, it's not a glamour market like L.A. or like Miami or something like that, tucked away in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, come on, let him get to a more glamorous market. He'll get more shine. We'll talk about him more. But sometimes you have an iconic kind of player with a certain franchise who's not going to chase it anywhere, who's going to do it right there. And Lillard has the respect of the basketball world in a different way than almost anyone else. Because of that attitude, he is going to be a franchise icon like very few in the modern NBA. Because of that, and by the way, guys, here's what's nuts about it all. I don't put it past him to bring a championship to Portland. You can't sleep on Damian Lillard that way. He should stay where he is because it's obviously where he wants to be.
I can sleep on it. I have slept on it. I'll continue to sleep on it. And you know how I feel about Damian Lillard. That's my man right there. Let me say this to you as a testament to his greatness. Max Kellerman, he signed up, obviously represented by Aaron and Eric Goodwin and the Goodwin Management Group. They do a great job. We know they're one of the elite agents in this business. This is Damian Lillard's salary over the next few years. So he's at $31 million this year. I think he's like 19th highest paid player in the NBA at $31 million. Next year, he's going to be at 43. 2022-23 is going to be at 47. 23-24, $50 million. 24-25 at $54 million. And ain't nobody even took a deep breath. That's how bad this brother is. He's something special, okay? Nobody qualms about anything in regards to Damian Lillard's money because Dame time is Dame time. He shows up when it counts. We know what he brings to the table. But we also know what ain't coming to the table. Ain't no damn championship. First of all, let me say this to you. Terry Stotts is a good coach. I'm not questioning anything about Terry Stotts in terms of his basketball acumen or whatever. But in terms of that coach that just has the ability to peel something extra out of people, I still haven't seen that from him. I think he's a good coach, but he's just a coach that won't hurt you, you know, because he knows what the hell he's doing. Whether he's that guy that will take you over the hump from a coaching standpoint has yet to be seen, and I'm still not sold on it. As it pertains to Damian Lillard, I'll tell you something I shared with both him and CJ McCollum in the past. I don't think they'll win together. I think both of them are lethal, arguably the best backcourt in basketball this side of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I get it. I understand it completely. When we talk about the best backcourts in the game, Harden and Kyrie, Dame and CJ, Steph and Klay when Klay is healthy and not in that order. That's how I feel about it. But here's the problem. For some reason, when it comes to Portland, that's all you got. You got other guys around you that could play the Mellos, the Covingtons of the world, the Nurkic of the world, who's, you know, always hurt and all of this other stuff, even though he could play at least offense when he's healthy. But I just look at it, and I've been one who firmly believes two things. Number one, because of Dame's personality, his moxie, his swag, just overall swag, because he don't say much, but when he speak, he like E.F. Hutton, you better listen, because he got something to say, okay? The brother's big time, and I'd love to see him in a big time market. Me personally, New York or L.A., I would love that, because I think Dame would, even though he's got all the commercials and he's got the money, believe it or not, I think there's room for his popularity to even grow because of that swag and the game that comes with it. So on a personal level, I would like to see that happen. But I'll say this, professionally, I don't believe they'll win a championship together. I think one of them has to be moved in order for Portland to utilize them to get the other assets they need in order to take them over the hump. That's just my personal belief. Well, that, and it's not because one is lacking. Both of them are legit. Both of them are it offensively. But defensively, in terms of size and things of that nature and whatever you can bring to the table, I just have always said, and I told them, I shared this with both of them at least a couple of years ago. I said, look, I think y'all will make the playoffs. I think y'all are good. I think y'all are big-time backcourt. But I don't think you'll ever win a championship together. Because Portland,
yeah,
ain't going
to get
the assets
they need. You said that to CJ McCollum when he came on this show a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you saying that C.J. McCollum. I think about it differently. I think you keep them together and you have to hit in the draft. Like, you're going to have to find a steal in the draft the way the Knicks came up with quickly, the way teams can find gems a little later in the draft to join these guys and maybe make a savvy move or two. But in regards to Lillard's money, you know what I was thinking as you were reading his salary, Stephen A.? Don't believe that time is money. Money is time. You stay focused, you look up, and your money is fine. You know who said that? Damian Lillard. Like, Lillard is not thinking about all that stuff. Lillard is focused on the job he has ahead, which he thinks is bringing a chip to Portland. You know, he's so competitive. We have a tendency, like, look what just happened with J.J. Watt. Oh, J.J. Watt really wasn't all about that competition, all about being competitive. If he was, he wouldn't have joined Arizona. He would have joined a more stocked team. Why is that more competitive? When you join a team that's already tipped the scales and now it's ridiculous, that's more competitive? Maybe it's more competitive for J.J. Watt to go to Arizona and say, I believe in Kyler Murray. I believe in some of the pieces on the defense. My guy DeAndre Hopkins, I'm going to sign here because I think we can compete and win. That Damian Lillard's attitude, he's not seeing it as I'm going to form a super team, a super duper team and make the super friends and the Hall of Justice and stuff, and no one will stand in our way. We'll obliterate everybody. To me, that's not the most competitive thing you can do. The most competitive is you stay where you are. And by the way, or even if you find another place and you believe in something you can build and lead to a championship, that is anti the way all these guys do it nowadays. And that's why Lillard in that way stands by himself. It's why he gets a different kind of respect.
Well, this is not about respect. I mean, there's no question. He's not lacking in the respect department. Anybody that knows anything about ball respects Damian Lillard. Anybody that knows anything about competition respects Damian Lillard. This is about whether or not he should remain in Portland. I think that he's done and continues to do all he can as a Portland trailblazer. I just don't think from an organizational perspective that's the right place for him to be. I've always said this to him. I'll continue to say that to him. I don't think it's the right place for him to be. I think him being there, they're going to be exactly what they are. They're going to be a competitive team. That's a playoff team.
Tough out.
But then they'll be a tough out, as you just said, a tough out. That's about all. He has never been in the situation, nor do I believe he will ever be in a situation where he's going to be a prohibitive favorite playing for the Portland Trailblazers. And I think his greatness demands that we see him on an even larger stage than we have. Now, it's his choice, and he's chosen. He told me personally, he ain't down with moving on. That's not how he rolls. He ain't trying to join some super team or anything like that. If anything, it's about cats joining him. He's where he wants to be. So I want to make sure I'm clear. This is me talking. He believes he did the right thing and he's right where he's supposed to be. And I can't knock him for that. All I'm saying is that when I think about a clutch player, as far as I'm concerned, the number one clutch player in basketball at this particular moment in time, I view him and I say, damn, it's a damn shame he's there instead of in a larger market on a prohibitive favorite. Because my God, could you imagine if he was doing this in Los Angeles or New York? Lord have mercy. It'd be something else.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't want to join a super team or ring chase or care about the market. Everybody's got different priorities, right? Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Look who we have in store for you next week on First Take on Monday. Lakers owner and president Jeannie Buss will join us to talk about her team's chances of a championship repeat. Then on Thursday, as we approach the anniversary of last year's sports shutdown, Dr. Anthony Fauci will stop by to tell us if sports will ever be the same again. Looking forward to both of those guests. And this one, Israel Adesanya is the undefeated UFC middleweight champion, but on Saturday, he'll be moving up to light heavyweight division to face Jan Blojevic at UFC 259. He's trying to become just the fifth fighter in UFC history to hold two titles in two different weight classes at the same time. And Israel, kind enough to join us now right here on First Take. Good afternoon to you, sir. And I'm into the robe, Purple Rain right there. Purple's the color of royalty. So thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
All right, moving up to light heavyweight, talk to me. What would it mean to you to capture a title in that weight class?
What would it mean to me? Just cementing further my legacy, because I already have a little bit, actually a lot, in this game. But then being, like you said, the fifth athlete in the sports history to hold two belts simultaneously, that just really etch it in the history books for real, for real.
Israel, what do you think? I mean, you're 20-0. You're 9-0 since you have entered the UFC in February of 2018. What do you believe you need to show this Saturday night? Is it just about winning, or are you on a mission to really, really showcase something that we may not have seen from you before? What's your mentality like coming into this fight?
A little bit of both. It's not just about winning. I always win, but I win in a spectacular fashion when someone comes to play, and this guy's coming to play for real. But also, yes, I am a bit greedy in the sense that I kind of want to showcase a facet of my game that hasn't been seen much, which is the grappling aspect. But he might want to showcase his stand-up and show that legendary Polish power he keeps talking about. So, yeah, it depends on how he wants to play. That's how he's going to go out.
Well, you're a pleasure for students of the fight game to watch because your style is, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like it. You switch hit like Terrence Crawford, the welterweight champ. You never know where the shot's going to come from. It's elbows, legs, arms, right-handed, left-handed, front foot, back foot, the whole thing. And we've seen like the Brunson fight, the strong guy try to take you down, couldn't do it. Anderson Silva, the legend, but he's older. And you, the Gastelum fight, like that to me showed me something that I hadn't seen where you got rocked and you came back and won. What did that moment mean to you in terms of your development as a fighter and a champion, to have that rocky moment that you had to overcome as opposed to just dominating the guy the entire time?
Yeah, that was a moment in my career that was defining, and not just in my career, like in the end of the fourth round, the beginning of the fifth round. Just to make this clear, the quote I said to him was, "You can't beat me, I'm prepared to die." And I said that. And that's like, honestly, top three, one of the greatest moments of my life, because I let go of everything. I surrendered to the great beyond. I was like, this is how I go out, this is how I go out. But what a glorious death. And when you're ready to die, you're ready to live. And when you're ready to die, you're ready to kill.
Israel, you've been fighting at 185. You're moving up to 205 for this fight Saturday night. You're moving up 20 pounds, and I please forgive me. I know you can't look past your opponent, and I'm not asking you to. I really am not. But I know somebody else that's been fighting at 205, and his name is John Bones Jones.
We're talking about him. I'm sick of his questions.
Okay.
He keeps clout trotting off my fight weeks. I don't really give a fuck about him. Right now, like you said, I'm focused on one thing and one man only, mm-hmm. and that's this Viking, Jan Blachowicz, in front of me. But If I don't get past him, then all that doesn't matter. So right now, this close to the fight, all I focus on is the guy in front of me and no clout trouts.
Okay, the guy in front of you, Blojevic. Hold on, Max. We have the guy in front of you, Blojevic. Knockout power, that's what they're saying about him. You're moving up 20 pounds to fight a guy with knockout power. How will you fight differently for this fight compared to what you fight at 185?
The same way I fight at 185. I hit and don't get hit. It's the smartest way I feel to play the game, and I do it very well. My last fight, I don't think I got touched in the face once in two rounds. And this guy, he's not as fast. He's a little bit longer. He's very awkward with his style, but they all find out pretty quick once they're in there with me how awkward I am as well. Even though, because I look clean, I look smooth with it, you know what I mean? So when I'm in there, I'm making it look clean, but the cadence is weird, the rhythm is weird, it's awkward, and they can't vibe with me like that.
Your defense is really interesting. Not only, you mean, you lean straight back, but you do it offline, left and right, and so you're slick and hard to hit. And without getting into John Jones specifically, I know you don't want to mention that, but the light heavyweight division throughout the history of the UFC has been the glamour division. I mean, middleweight, but light heavy somehow has like been the glamour division. Is that meaningful for you to fight at light heavy and win a championship there, or try to?
It was the glamour division for a while. I mean, you had guys like Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, Rampage Jackson, great fighters like Daniel Cormier, you know, and so on. It was a stacked division. It was a stacked division for a while. But then, eventually, when John started to fight recycled middleweights and recycled opponents and failed to move up in weight, it got stagnant. So, yeah, it was the glamour division, and then, you know, the new dog in the yard came into the middleweight division and then put some shine on it. And then there was lightweight as well that was stacked for a long time. So, yeah, for me, it's just a showcase. I mean, I look at this fight kind of like UFC 101 when Anderson Silva went up to fight Forrest Griffin, and it was a showcase. It was a masterclass. It was in the Matrix, and he knocked him out during the moonwalk. It was crazy. So, yeah, this is. I've got some big shoes to fill, but I got big feet.
Are you concerned? Or has your thinking changed at all in terms of your defense? Because sometimes you'll pull straight back and then move offline. You'll catch people with check hooks coming in, and you have knockout power, long levers. But as you rise in weight, and when you pull straight back, you're more in the line of shots because these are bigger guys with longer reach. Is there any adjustment you're making for light heavy?
Yes, I like that question, Max. Yes. Like I said, this guy's a little longer than old T-Rex arms I fought in my last fight. So I can't just lean out of the shots like I would in that scenario. If they watch that tape and think, oh, we can catch him while he's leaning, they're seriously and severely mistaken, because my feet will adjust to the distance. I'll find his range within the first 20, 30 seconds. And by the first two punches he's thrown, I'll adjust to the edge of his punches, and I'll be able to pull back if I need to. But he'll follow my feet. I'll follow his feet. He'll follow my feet. It'll be a beautiful dance. It'll be a beautiful dance. But yeah, I know what you mean about the defense. I'm not just going to be dumb and pull straight back. I've got some other tricks up my sleeve. Mm.
It's not just about, not just about fighting, but also sports. I've often said that sports is about theater as well. And one of the greatest events that I've ever seen was years ago when McGregor was fighting at Madison Square Garden. And now I look at you undefeated, as elite as you are. I also think that you have a chance, if you're not there already, to be the main attraction in the UFC. Do you feel that you're there? If not, do you feel this fight, this win could take you there? What's your whole mindset as it pertains to being that guy, the face of the UFC moving forward, sir?
I feel like I'm kind of there, but not really where I need to be. I'm not where I need to be, you know? So that's why I keep taking on these great challenges, so I can like shock the world again and again. The last time I told you guys, I'm going to show the casuals that it's not big muscles and, you know, these movie star, you know, looks that are going to win the fights, because the casuals are going to be like, oh my God, this muscly guy got beat by the skinny boy. And I did that at my last fight. Now, this fight's for the purists. This fight is for those people who know shit about MMA, who know the vibe, and who know that this Viking I'm about to face is a marauder. He's a guy that's gonna, that's gonna come forward with his style effectively. And he's actually a bigger guy than my last opponent as well, and he knows how to use his size. So this is for the purists when we talk about like David and Goliath.
You mentioned it. You touched on it earlier in the interview, but whether it's Blachowicz or someone else, you're a striker who's extreme. Like, guys have tried to take you down, and they've paid the price to the tune of, like, they get stopped immediately because it's hard to get inside on you. But whether it's for the title now or it's in a title defense later, eventually some real good wrestler or grappler at the highest level is going to get through your defense, you would think, or your offense in this case. How confident are you in those situations on the ground with people who can grapple the way you can strike?
I'm very confident. I'm very confident grappling expertise. I'm not where I need to be, but I don't think I ever will be. Same with my striking. I'm super confident in my striking, but there's always room for improvement. Same with my grappling. And, you know, spending the last 5 weeks of the end of last year, Atos in San Diego, I knew my grappling leveled up. But like I said earlier on in the interview, I do want to showcase a little bit of that. And if this guy wants to oblige me, be my guest. This ain't jiu-jitsu, though. Just understand that. The difference when you're grappling with someone and they hit you with an elbow from an angle you're not even expecting. So, yeah, I welcome all challenges. I welcome all scenarios.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to a beautiful dance for the purists. Israel, thank you so much. Best of luck Saturday night. We got three titles on the line. Don't forget it, everybody. The prelims start at 8 Eastern on ESPN. ESPN Plus, ESPN Deportes. And the main card begins at 10 Eastern on pay-per-view. To order in English and Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/pay-per-view. To the NBA, after the Lakers lost to the Kings last night, Montrezl Harrell offered some sharp criticism of NBA officiating after being hit with a technical for yelling "and one" in the second quarter.
Everybody on the bench, everybody in the arena, even the guy sitting at the scores table said, you can't do that. You can't give a guy a tech just for saying "and one." And if I'm going to get a tech for saying "and one," man, then they might just take me off all year, man, because I've said way worse than that and haven't been given a tech.
Stephen A., I'll let you take this. Does the NBA have an officiating problem?
Yes, they do. But I'd like to say this first. If he deserves a tech for anything, it's for the damn wardrobe. Some of his wardrobes, I mean, he deserves a technical foul for that, personally. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I just want to throw that out there. He makes a lot of money. He can dress better than he dresses. Having said all of that, he's a hell of a player. He goes after it. I got a lot of respect for Montrezl Harrell, and he's absolutely right on this as well. It's gotten to the point where it's just too damn ridiculous. Let me tell the NBA something. I love the NBA. I've been associated with the NBA for a quarter century. I love this league. I care about it. And one of the biggest reasons that I care about it is that they've almost never failed to give the fans what we want to see. And they haven't robbed us of things that we haven't wanted to see. And this has gotten a bit excessive. When you are getting technical fouls for screaming "and one," when you two are just jobbing at one another and that's all, but ain't no fists being thrown or anything like that. I totally understand the notion. You don't wait for something bad to happen to sort of cut it off at the path. But these guys, give them credit for being the responsible individuals that they are, while also being highly competitive. If they want to talk junk to one another, let them talk junk to one another. When Damian Lillard hits a game-winning shot and waves goodbye to Russell Westbrook and Paul George when they were in Oklahoma City, what are you going to do? Stop the game and call him to the line and give him a technical foul because he waved goodbye to them? What are we doing here? The fact of the matter is that Devin Booker's on the floor the other night. The Phoenix Suns haven't been relevant in years. Monty Williams is doing a hell of a job. They're 15-3 in their last 18 games. They're the number two seed in the Western Conference. They're going up against the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James. And their star gets ejected for what? For what?
You got Donovan Mitchell last night in Philadelphia. You know, you're making calls all over the place that they got question marks about. You're going to throw him out of the game in overtime? You're literally going to impact the game by throwing out the star in overtime. That's no regard for the fans. Let's just call it what it is. That's no regard for the fans. And yes, they're not in attendance right now because of COVID-19, but they're watching the games at home. It was important for you to make sure you had at least a 70-game season, as Max Kellerman has pointed out on several occasions, so you can make sure you get your local dollars, your local television revenue. That means you want people to watch in their locales, in their specific local locations. That's what you wanted to do. If you're the Phoenix Suns, if you're the Phoenix market, yes, you ended up winning the game. But that ain't the point. What if you had lost? Why would you sit up there and throw Devin Booker out over something so innocuous? It's gotten to a point now where the officials, and I speak to officials, I know a few of them, and I do understand that some players go overboard, that players are not totally innocent here. Some of the things that they say to these guys, particularly with the money that they're getting paid these days, they don't give a damn about the fines. It doesn't affect them. They think they can say anything they want to officials from time to time. I get it. I understand it. But at the end of the day, you ain't the game. You're a part of the game. The players are the primary commodities in the game. And if you're a fan and you're watching, we want to see them play. We want to see them play. We don't want them getting ejected because you as the official had an attitude. We don't want them getting ejected because you were a bit salty after you woke up on this side of the bed today. We don't want to see them getting ejected and don't comprehend as to why that is, because they whispered something in your face or whatever the case may be. We're watching to see them play. And you are taking that away from us with the excessive amount of officiating, the foul called, the technical fouls handed out. You are robbing the fan when you do that. It needs to stop. They need to get thicker skin. That's what officiating is all about. Thicker skin. If you could tolerate it years and years and years ago when you were building the game, over the previous 2 to 3 decades, you should be able to tolerate it now. What's up with all of this softest putty nonsense that we're dealing with, where you can't take a damn thing and the fans get robbed of seeing the great players we want to see? It has to stop. Find a way to keep them on the court so we can watch them play. That's what we want.
I co-sign that general sentiment. Everyone's too thin-skinned. I co-sign that general sentiment. And NBA officials are throwing players out of game for stuff that does not rise to that level, in my opinion, although you don't know exactly what they said most of the time. But let's take this on a case-by-case basis. Devin Booker got thrown out the other day. That seemed very quick to me. And ticky-tack. Donovan Mitchell got thrown out, and Donovan Mitchell is known as a high-character guy. But even high-character guys have bad nights. And he had played well, and his team was winning, and then down the stretch in the fourth quarter, he got locked up, made a lot of bad decisions on offense, and it cost his team, and they wound up going into overtime and losing. He gets thrown out of the game, but he's consistently, you know, it's not like it's just one incident. He's being demonstrative. I understand that a little bit more. Montrezl Harrell is a reputation throwout. That's all that was. I mean, it is absurd to throw a player out for saying and one. Or to tee him up for saying and one. Sorry. That's absurd. Are we joking here? But Montrezl Harrell has a rep because he's an instigator and he's a dude who plays, you know, a little psychological warfare on the court. That goes for opponents, that goes for officials. So his reputation preceded him and he got a quick one. But, you know, but it's not an excuse. You can't, to tee a guy up for saying and one is a mockery of what an official is supposed to do. But Montrezl Harrell, that's the price you pay for being that kind of an antagonist on the court. So I'd say Devin Booker, no good. Donovan Mitchell, even though the circumstances, Stephen A., I agree with you. You try to let that go, but I understand it more. Montrezl Harrell, that's just ridiculous.
It has to stop, man. It's not good for the game. It really, really isn't. And especially people have to understand, the NBA has to understand that people are going to be even more heightened with their sensitivities in this day and age. We missed the game. We wish we were in attendance for these games. We wish that the arenas were packed every single night. But because that isn't the case, we're at home watching on TV instead and still patronizing and supporting the NBA brand. And we're doing it because we want to see these guys play. Now, I'm not saying that the guys should get away with saying just anything to you. Please don't get me wrong. There is a level of culpability that falls on the part of the players. But I do think that everybody would recognize that the NBA is guilty of being over-excessive with it. You got guys looking at each other. The Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo dunked on somebody the other day and then just cringed in his face, just gave that look. And look, and the ref teed him because he looked at him after he dunked on him. What the hell is going on? What is going
Stephen A.,
on?
You know what
it
happens?
It has to stop.
You know what happens when a league goes too far in that direction? When it gets to, the word is staid and kind of corporate? What happens is you get a rival league that starts to try to have some more fun. You know, like the ABA was a response to an NBA league that wasn't that fun. You know, and it, by the way, once they got absorbed, the NBA got more fun. They had a three-point shot, and some things changed. And, how would you like to watch a basketball league where guys hang on the rim and taunt each other and guys aren't getting thrown out of games? Like, that's part of the show. You know, what would happen is if a fledgling league like that started and had any success, the NBA would absorb it, and they would have to adopt it. So I understand what you mean about, look, you want to nip it in the bud so you understand their motivation. Don't let it get out of control. This has been going on for years now. But the pendulum can swing too far in the other direction. Let these guys have some fun. It's fun for the fans.
And not only that, we love the fact that, again, to piggyback off your last point, we love seeing them go at each other. You got to remember, Max, when we bring up the fact that these players are making so much money, right, it's easy to surmise that, yeah, they'll go out there and they'll play hard, but they don't really care about the outcome. It's easy to assume that. I'm not saying that's correct because I don't believe that for one second. But people on the outside looking at players as entitled and privileged and what have you, it's like they're like, they don't care. They don't care as much as we want them to. What shuts all of that noise down, Max, when you see them going at each other? Because you know that they're therefore holding one another accountable because we love seeing them going at each other. I'm not saying that LeBron was wrong, but when LeBron first left Miami to go back to Cleveland and him and D-Wade saw one another and were hugging one another and what have you, and Cleveland had lost that particular game, you had people calling out LeBron at that particular moment in time. They're like, wait a minute, that ain't your boy. No, I mean, he's your boy off the court, but on the court, y'all got to go at each other, blah, blah, blah. People were bloviating about stuff like that. And time again, we've seen it. We've seen old school cats lamenting about the affection once had one another. Pat Riley wouldn't even tolerate that stuff. He didn't want any part of it. He had a problem because he's old school. But it really points to a bigger issue. When there's animus between two combatants, to some degree, even if it's friendly and you're going back and forth, it's something that ensures us you going all out to one up the competition. Therefore, we have faith in you. Our faith elevates because we're looking at the product fiercely competing with one another. And then we get even more invested. When you take that away from the fans, you're compromising the quality of the competition, at least in the eyes of the viewing public, because we know what we've seen in the past. We're not seeing that now. And for that to be emanating or descending, rather, from the league office or from a fit down to officials where you're infiltrating the game in such a way that you're compromising the authentic element of competitive fervor. That's a problem. You cannot do that to people like that. The players ain't doing it. They're actually getting money and going out there and busting their tail to compete in front of us. And others are getting in their way. It has to stop. It has to stop, period.
You're 100% right. Seeing a little animosity, a little trash talk, that's what makes it fun for all of us. Guys, you
just don't throw blows.
Right? It's part of the game. I mean, the fact that, like, making a face, I mean, it's ridiculous. All right, let's talk about last night, though, guys. James Harden, incredible in his return back to Houston. He got mixed reviews from the fans, understandably. And then also, Joel Embiid, incredible. 40 points, 19 rebounds. So, Stephen A., let me ask you this. Do you think James Harden is actually the MVP right now?
To me, he is. At this particular moment in time, he is. I mean, they're only a half game behind Joel Embiid's Philadelphia 76ers. And most of the stuff that James Harden has done in a Brooklyn Nets uniform is without the services of Kevin Durant. And to some degree, without Kyrie Irving. And so when I look at it, I say to myself, damn, this guy comes into Brooklyn. He's the three-time league-leading scorer, 30 points per game over the last three games. He's been absolutely sensational. And then he comes to Brooklyn and says, I'll be the point guard. I'll be the facilitator. I'll get everybody involved. And Kyrie's like, thank you very, very much. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. That's news to my ear. And he has run this team. Joe Harris was on a Woj podcast, and he was talking about what a godsend James Harden has been, what a leader he has been, how he's distributing the basketball, et cetera, et cetera. James Harden is flat out balling. He's putting up triple doubles like they're going out of style. He's leading the league in assists. He's still averaging 25 a game. And by the way, despite their troubles, they've won 10 of their last 11 games, and this man has led the way, and they're only a half game out of the Philadelphia 76ers for the number one seed in the Eastern Conference without, again, the services of Kevin Durant for the last 18 games. That's why I look at James Harden in this fashion. That is why I believe he is the league MVP at this moment in time.
Harden's been unbelievable. You know, I think he's playing the best basketball of his career, and that's saying something. I don't think he can be the MVP right now. He didn't start the season with the team. And it's not like, even if you think somehow he's been the most valuable player, it's not by enough to say, let's not count the games that he wasn't there, that Embiid was there. Joel Embiid has been the MVP right from the start of the season till now. So far in the first half, it's been wire to wire, Embiid number one. Even if you think Harden has been better offensively, and that's debatable, I think you could easily argue Embiid's been better offensively, averaging 30 with 11.5 boards and a block and a half, but 30 points a game, and his efficiency numbers are right there. Actually, want to know who has better efficiency numbers right now on offense, at least PER, right, is Jokic. But Embiid has been incredibly efficient and prolific scoring the ball. And even if you want to argue Harden has a tiny little advantage there because he's orchestrating the offense, what about the defense? Like, Harden's an underrated defender. I'm on the verge of saying he's a good defender. Not quite there yet. But Embiid is, if he's not the best defensive player in basketball this year, he's the best defensive center. If Ben Simmons, or you want to point to one or two other guys, but he's on that level, you can't look at anyone and say, yeah, that guy was really much better defensively than Embiid this year. That's half the game. And then look at how Embiid is leading his team. Even, like, you're talking about guys getting ejected. He's pointing to, like, he wants Donovan Mitchell ejected. He's like, doing what LeBron did to Draymond Green. He's kind of egging him on. He's being competitive all around. He's going into every arena saying, okay, who's the other guy's big? Gobert's the big. I want his pelt on my wall. Miles Turner, whoever it is, proving that he's better than the opposition night in and night out. Harden's been amazing. I can't say he's the MVP over Embiid so far. And by the way, to say nothing of LeBron, who's missed one game.
Yeah. I feel where you're coming from. Listen, James Harden, Joel Embiid has been a monster. He's been sensational. But James Harden, right now, I think that you have to take a few things into consideration. He was out of shape. You can hold that against him, obviously. I choose to hold it in his favor in this regard. Yes, he came into camp. He skipped training camp. He came into the season out of shape. You know, his last few games in Houston, definitely he was tanking. He didn't give a damn because he wanted out, and he made it very, very clear. And he knew the only way he was going to get out of there is if he was a bit truculent to some degree, and that's what we saw. But ever since he's arrived in Brooklyn, we've seen the real James Harden. And I dare say we've seen an elevated level of James Harden, because in Houston, he was your primary offensive option. He knows that isn't the case in Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, you've got Kyrie Irving, and then he's made it a priority to get the Jeff Greens, the Joe Harrises, even the DeAndre Jordans and others, the TLCs and others, involved in game action. And so he's truly, truly running that team and reminding us of the potential that he presumably had at Oklahoma
Oklahoma City when the Oklahoma City Thunder clearly said, this is Russell Westbrook's team. It's not yours. You're not that dude as of yet. And he went to Houston and immediately started showing, oh, yes, he is that dude. And so I think as a result of that, and also some of the things that we've said about him, you've acknowledged his improved play defensively. Offensively, we know what he can do. We wondered what he was willing to do, and now we're not even wondering about that anymore. Meanwhile, while the Sixers are loaded and healthy, they're still holding on for dear life to the number one seed because Brooklyn is on their heels without Kevin Durant and in some games without a Kyrie Irving. This man, James Harden, is reliable and dependable, not just available. He's all of those things because every night, night in, night out, he doesn't want to take games off. He wants to play. He has never engaged in load management in his career. He's never done it. And so these are the kind of things I think he's forcing us to look at and to view him in the light that an MVP should be looked upon.
Let's not exaggerate Kyrie's absence, though. He has played in 26 games. He's averaging over 35 minutes a game. And Kyrie, and by the way, Harden also gets credit for this, but so does Kyrie, has been playing winning basketball, a winning brand of basketball, not just putting up numbers. And when you bring up guys like Joe Harris, dude might be the best shooter in the league other than Steph Curry, right? Like, Joe Harris can shoot the lights out. So it's not like in KD's absence, they don't have a squad. They got guys who can play.
I agree with you.
All right. We asked our First Take fam at home. They thought it was Embiid. He won the poll of who's the MVP right now. But this was kind of interesting, guys. LeBron beat out Harden. Max, your thoughts on that? LeBron being ahead of Harden for MVP.
Yeah, I would say Embiid 1, LeBron 2, Harden 3. I can't believe I'm saying Harden's even top 3, considering he wasn't there for the beginning of the season for the Nets. But he is. He's forced his way into the conversation.
2 weeks ago, it was LeBron. A week ago, for me, it was Embiid because LeBron and the Lakers had gone on a four-game losing streak. And now it's Harden at number one, Embiid at number two, LeBron at number three. It's fluid because it's that close. All three are balling. And I'm sure that we'll revisit this week to week as the season progresses. But right now, as I'm sitting here today, based on what I've seen, the Philadelphia 76ers have been on a little roller coaster. Brooklyn has won 10 of their last 11. And the Lakers won a little bit of roller coaster. And Harden hasn't had KD. That's why I can sit up here and comfortably say that at this particular moment in time.
Max, real quick, if people want more Max Kellerman, when can they listen and watch you today, if you could tell me that? And then Stephen A., I need to know about Stephen A.'s world.
2 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Thanks, Molly. The Max Kellerman Show.
Stephen A.?
Stephen A.'s World, ESPN Plus. I'll holler at y'all later. Peace.